Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study, and I am pleased to be here with you today. We're coming to you live from Temple Sinai Synagogue in St. Francisville, Louisiana, thanks to an arrangement with the Julius Freehand Foundation and the West Feliciana Historical Society. We're very appreciative of their allowing us into this place, which was built in 1901 and dedicated to promulgating the Hebrew scriptures, the ways of justice and righteousness in the earth. And to think that now in the modern day, we're able to do that via the World Wide Web in a way that they couldn't have even imagined. At least I think they couldn't. But think about that. I mean, so I'm so excited. Now let me say one thing about today's date. December the 7th. I know a lot of people are thinking of the date that will live in infamy, and I am as well. But I'm also thinking about a very positive turn of events that took place on this date. December the 7th, 2005, I received the keys to this building. So 14 years ago today, I walked into a man's office here at the town, and I told him what I wanted to do, and he handed me the key and said, "I'm glad that it will be used for what it was originally intended to be used for." So today is a very special day because we were here. We were here for nearly 6 years, I guess, and then we had to leave, and then we came back. We're back now, and so goes the story of Israel, introduced to us in the Torah by the name Yaakov or Jacob. And so I'm going to be talking about that today. But again, I wanted to welcome you. I'm glad that you're here with us today. A special shout out to the ladies who are in Mississippi. All ladies in Mississippi, I guess, but particularly the ladies who are assembled at Jodel and Jack Onstott's for the women's conference. So I'm glad that you're there, and I hope that this weekend serves to be a time of refreshing for all of those in attendance, and I'm sure that they'll do this again. So if you weren't able to make it this year, perhaps next year. But we are here today to talk about the Torah, to talk about the story of Jacob. And as I said, the story of Jacob is one of many ups and downs. We're going to talk a little bit more in detail as we work through the material, but I want to focus on a certain aspect of the life of Yaakov. He leaves and he comes back. Years ago, one of my teachers, Johnny Powell Yochanani, many of you know him, he told me that at its core, the biblical message is one of depart and return. Depart and return. And when you think about that, you can come up with several biblical stories which say that, which promote that particular idea of leaving and coming back. So at its core, that's the message. The people, humans in general, were placed in Gan Eden, in paradise on earth. And you've heard the phrase, paradise lost. So in a very broad way, humanity and the story of human existence is one of depart and return. Man was given dominion and placed in a very special place created in specific for him or them, but they had to leave. And since that time, humanity has been wandering, as the Bible describes it, navanad, as a fugitive and a wanderer, trying to come back into that paradise, Gan Eden. And by the way, I'm going to bring this in our story today, but at the gate of Eden, when the children of Israel, or when Adam and Eve are banished therefrom, there was placed at the gate a cherubim, cherubim, as most people say in English, guarding the way to the tree of life, keeping humanity outside those bounds. Today's teaching, I'm excited to present to you today, Torah reading known as Vayetze. Vayetze is that portion of the Torah in the patriarchal narratives focusing on the life of Jacob from Genesis chapter 28, verse 10 through chapter 32 and verse 3. Vayetze. And it comes to us, you know, as most of these Torah readings are called, after the first significant word in the reading to which it's ascribed. So I'm going to read to you the opening of the Torah portion. This particular Torah portion begins, Vayetze Yaakov miber sheva vayelek haranah. And Jacob went forth from Beersheba and went towards Haran. Jacob went forth. Vayetze. It's the story of Jacob leaving, and by the end of today's Torah portion, he's coming back. A lot of time elapses in this particular Torah portion. In fact, this particular Torah portion, one of my favorites, is extremely fast-paced. It's almost, and I want you to read it like this, it's almost breakneck pace. It's running. Think about it like that. And that's indicated in a variety of ways. At the beginning of the Torah portion, Jacob is in flight. He's fleeing from his brother Esau after acquiring, let's just say, the birthright and the blessing. And his mother tells him, your brother is going to kill you. So the arrangement is made in last week's Torah portion, Toledot, for Yaakov to leave under the guise of finding a woman. Remember, Esau had women that the parents didn't approve of. And so Jacob is going back to his mother's family in Haran to be with her brother, Laban, and Jacob's uncle. We're going to talk a little bit about that. He is on the run, basically, for his life. From start to finish, this particular Torah portion, though, is fast-paced. And one other indication that it is, to me, is that in this particular Torah reading, we have no white spaces. From the beginning of the Torah reading in Genesis chapter 28, verse 10, there's not a single break. It'd be like reading four or five chapters in a book without any indentation indicating a pause or a paragraph even. It's just a continuous flow, and that's going to be very interesting because in that space, between the spaces, covering several chapters, is 20 years. 20 years, and earlier this week, I did a live video from the United Israel Center, and I was reflecting back on 30 years of my life. In some ways, it seems like it was a long time ago, but in many ways, it feels like it just flew by. How many of you can relate that sometimes time flies? I'm looking at Mark in here today. When Mark and I began studying together, now going on three decades ago, he was a whole lot younger. But now, I'm looking at, like I'm looking in the mirror, another gray-headed guy. We've been at this a long time. But sometimes, I can picture those early days, 30 years ago, in my living room with Bibles opened up. It's amazing. One other thing that comes to mind, and I'm just going to bring this up when I talk about how time flies. Jacob, in this particular week's Torah portion, Vayetze, He, as you recall, is in love with Rachel. And perhaps one of the most beautifully written, just in six words in Hebrew, he talks about, the Torah tells us that he went for 7 years working so that he could have the one that he loved. And the Torah puts it this way, it's like it ought to just knock you over. Harlequin has never penned anything this beautiful. It says this, he worked for 7 years and they seemed like but a few days. Now that's love. Now I'll tell you, maybe just to bring a little light humor in, someone asked Bridget, my wife, one time, we had, I think, reached the level of 30 years together, and someone obviously who thought from the outside that it would be much more wonderful to be married to me, and they made a comment, something to that effect, and I remember her response. I heard it from the distance. She said, yeah, 30 years. She said, I could have been out for armed robbery by now. So it's a little bit different view. It's not quite as heart she can't write for Harlequin, let me just tell you. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want to talk about the story of Yaakov, the story of Jacob. We're in the patriarchal narratives. The story of Jacob in the Torah takes up about half of Genesis. Jacob lives to be 147 years old. At the reunion when he is brought to Egypt, you know, I'm just touching on this. He's brought before Pharaoh and he describes his life this way. He said that my days have been few and bad. He's looking back on his life, the ups and the downs, and he says, my days haven't even attained the length of days of my fathers. But the life of Jacob sets the stage not only for the historical narrative, but it paves the way for everything which follows in biblical literature. He is arguably the single most important figure in biblical literature. I want you to look with me at Hosea chapter 12. Hosea chapter 12. Hosea mentions some key events in the life of Yaakov, in the life of Jacob. And while I'm in the patriarchal narratives, as you have noticed, I go to Hosea chapter 12 quite a bit, particularly when I'm talking about the life of Yaakov, the few and bad days of Jacob. And I'll start in verse 3, Hosea chapter 3, because I want to bring up something to show you that the prophet Hosea mixes history and prophecy in a very interesting way. It's intertwined. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm only going to pull out a few historical points that he mentions about Jacob, indicating that at the time Hosea is written, he knows these stories of Jacob. It says in verse 3 of chapter 12, and Jehovah has a controversy with Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings, will he recompense him. He took his brother by the heel in the womb. Remember that story? That's in Toledot. That's last week's Torah portion. And by his strength, he strove with God. He strove with a malach, translated angel, means messenger, does appear to be a heavenly messenger, if you will, and prevailed. By the way, that's next week's Torah portion. And he wept, and he made supplication to him. He would find him in Bethel, and there he would speak with us. Now, I brought this up before. I want to emphasize it this morning. I want to place a line under it because it is so essential that when this incident takes place at Bethel, we hear that the communication that takes place goes beyond the historical narrative and talks to us. Some translations change that and they say, and there he spoke with him, because it makes more sense. But the Hebrew indicates that he is speaking to us through this ancient event. And it ends, but Jehovah is the God of hosts. Jehovah is his name. Now go down to verse 12, verse 13. And Yaakov fled into the country of Aram, and Israel served for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. Now, these three or four incidents in the life of Yaakov in 140 years of life, which he describes, the days of the years of his life are few and bad. The prophet Hosea picks out several key points. He's been a fighter from day one. He grabbed his brother's heel in the womb. He fought with an angel. And he strove and served for a woman, and for a wife he kept sheep. What if your life, what if you lived 147 years and this is the way your life is described? But you can pull some things out of there which are essential in getting to know the patriarch. Yaakov is the third in the patriarchal triad of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is the father of the tribes, or it might be better put to say that he is the father of those descendants who become the predicted Goy Gadol, a great nation. Abraham, Isaac, when we have Yaakov through his women produce what the Bible describes as a Goy Gadol, a great nation. A covenant people, the descendants of Jacob are called. A kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And it is all, listen, every bit of it is tied to a dream. A dream. When I go to Israel and I look at everything around me, from the ancient sites to a thriving democracy in which good is promoted and that light is shining to its neighbors, people have rights there like no other place in that part of the world. And it's all tied to a dream. For thousands of years, Jacob, the descendants of Israel, were scattered throughout the nations, and they clung to a book which told them that God had given them a special place on this earth, a place from which they were to inhabit and dwell and raise families and raise fruit and build houses and be a light to the nations. And it's all tied to a dream. It happened in the night. It was a dream. And today, you can go and see the fulfillment in many ways of that dream. Listen to me. The reason that I'm speaking is because I fell in love with a book that is based on a dream. This dream is real. Some might wonder if dreams are real. Let me tell you something. Biblically, everything that you believe, you don't even have to believe like I believe. Your belief system might be different than mine, but it too is based on a dream. Every Western religion can trace its way back to the dream of Jacob. Now, I wanted to bring this up because I think it's essential. We tend to think that back in biblical times, or as my grandson Kalel says, back in the day, that when God would speak to these people, he would show up and they would hear an audible voice. But what if it's not too dissimilar to today? I'll give you an example. Go with me to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. And I just want to give you a common story, a popular story, a well-known story. And I want you to think about it in 1 Kings chapter 3. And I'm just going to read, and I want you to read what I read. Towards the end of, let's see, verse 6. And God said, "What ask to Solomon?" God speaking to Solomon. "What shall I give you?" And Solomon said, "You've shown great faithful love to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before thee in truth and righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great faithful love that you've given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, Jehovah, my God, you've made your servant king instead of David, my father, but I'm a little child. I know how to go out. I know not how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered or counted for multitude. Give therefore your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this so great thy people?" And it pleased Jehovah that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said to him, "Because you've asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, neither have you asked for riches, and you have asked the life of your enemies, but you've asked for yourself understanding to discern between judgment. Behold, I've done according to thy words. Lo, I've given you a wise and an understanding heart, since there has been none like thee before thee, nor after thee shall any arise like thee. And also I've given thee that which you've not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like you in all your days. And if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days." Beautiful story. Jehovah and Solomon, if you only read what I read, are having a conversation. And God says, "What can I give you? What would you ask?" And Solomon asked for wisdom to lead God's great people. And God answers him in a dream. Look at verse 3, which I skipped, or verse 5. "In Givon, Jehovah appeared to Solomon in a dream by night." Everything which follows is in a dream. And at the end of that, in verse 15, it says, "And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream." Now, I think a lot of times people have a picture of the way that the communication between God and man work. I remember as a child even, I used to think, I just wish that God would talk to me like he spoke to, name your favorite biblical character. What if he is? What if it's not too dissimilar? Listen, everything to do with this biblical patriarchal plan, which is set and established to change the world in which we live, is based on a dream. Because that's the way God communicates. If you can catch hold of the dream of justice and righteousness and how to plant that on earth, that's a good, sweet sleep. Look with me to the book of Bamidbar, to the book of Numbers, chapter 12. To underscore this just a little bit more, Numbers chapter 12, I just want to read one verse, but I want you to listen to it. I want it to sink in. I want you to hear in Numbers chapter 12, verse 6. And he said, "Hear now my words." This is Jehovah speaking. "If there is a prophet among you, I, Jehovah, make myself known to him in a vision and speak to him in a dream." We tend to look at the communication between God and the prophets of old. Now, Moses is a special case, which we'll get to in our Torah studies. But how is it that God gets inside the mind and heart of people, encouraging them, inspiring them, and causing them to go forward on his behalf? In a dream. And it's also this way in the future. It's not going to be a different method when we look into the future. If you look at the prophet Joel, chapter 3, verse 1, if you're in an English Bible, it's going to be chapter 2, verse 28, if my memory serves me. "And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions, and also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit." Perhaps we've been thinking about connecting with God in the wrong way. Let me tell you something. Remember in 1 Samuel, when in chapter 3, when Samuel is sleeping in the holy place and he hears Shmuel, Shmuel. And he wakes up and he runs to Eli, the old priest, and he says, "You called." He said, "I didn't call you. Go back to bed." Goes back to bed. He gets up, he hears it again in his sleep. "Shmuel, Shmuel." He jumps up, he runs to Eli. "You call." Now, this goes on three times, and finally the priest says, "Aha! The Lord's calling you. Next time you hear it, say this. Speak, Jehovah, your servant is listening." You see, when Jehovah begins to move, Amos says that God does nothing unless he reveals his secret unto his servants, the prophets, and he does so in the night. The plan of God, the purposes of God, everything that we read in the glorious truths contained between the covers is built on a dream. Go with me to Genesis chapter 28. Genesis chapter 28, beginning in verse 10, "Vayetze Yaakov, and Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And he lighted on a certain place and tarried there all night, because the sun was set. And he took one of the stones of that place, and he put them under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed. And he dreamed. And behold, a ladder was set up on earth." In Hebrew, it's a sulam, an ascent, like a staircase, perhaps. "And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, Jehovah stood above it and said, 'I am Jehovah, God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, to thee will I give it, and to your seed, And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, will keep thee in all the places in which you go, and I will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. This is the patriarchal promise. Yaakov is fleeing for his life, basically, going towards Haran from Beersheba. He's headed north. He comes to a place as the sun sets, and made a bed of the earth, used a stone to rest his head, and closes his eyes, and Jehovah speaks to him in his sleep. He reiterates to Yaakov the main two primary points of the patriarchal plan. And this dream is about progeny and property. A people and a land. A land and a people. Interestingly enough, Yaakov is at the edge of the land. He's on his way out of the land. But he's told before he leaves, I'll bring you back. I'll bring you back. I'm not going to leave you until I accomplish that which I have set forward for you. Now, at this point in our story, I want to go through, just so you have them in your notes, and I want to go through the promises to the patriarchs, because these become essential as we move forward. Go back with me to Genesis 12. Genesis 12, beginning in verse 1. Jehovah spoke to Avram, Lech Lecha, get thee out of thy country and from your kindred and from your father's house to a land that I will show you, and I will make of you a goy gadol, a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I'll bless them that bless you and curse him that curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Powerful promise. It begins when you walk for yourself. We know from Joshua 24 that Abram at the time lived across the river and was part of an idolatrous group. Says that he and his fathers, or it actually says they there, served other gods. On the other side of the river, they served other gods. But God calls him out of that and says, walk for yourself. You have to leave everything with which you're familiar and go to a place that you've never seen. Yes, blessing is to come to Avram and to his seed, but that blessing is to come in order that they might fulfill the obligation for which God will use them, and that is this, to be a blessing and to bless others. Let me tell you something, if Israel isn't fulfilling that piece, they're not fulfilling the promise. It involves work. Go to chapter 13. I'm just going to go through these quickly. Chapter 13 of Genesis, beginning in verse 14. And Jehovah said to Avram, after Lot was separated from him, lift up now your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. All the land which you see, to you will I give it, and to your seed forever. And I will make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it, the breadth of it, for I will give it to you. You hear that? Seed and land, progeny and property. I'm going to give you a land, and I'm going to give you seed. Now remember, at the time, Abram doesn't have any descendants. Look at chapter 18. I put these in my notes last night because they weren't originally in there, but they should have been, so they are now. Verse 17 of chapter 18, Genesis, Jehovah said, "Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I intend to do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he'll command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of Jehovah to do justice and judgment," or righteousness, "that Jehovah may bring upon Abraham that which he's spoken of him." You see how it's connected. God calls this particular man, promises to give progeny and property with the caveat that they are to be, ultimately, we learn these things, a light to the nation, a covenant of the people. You're going to be a great nation. You know what makes this nation great? This dream nation, call it the nation of the dream. You know what makes this nation great? They have a wise, this is what the nations will say, Deuteronomy chapter 4. What a wise and understanding people is this, who have such great laws and so forth. They're going to model the way. That's their job. They model the way, so that ultimately people look upon this group and say, that is what I want to be like. Look, if there are people in that nation who are putting the hand out to stop people from coming in, or to stop them from seeking to live their life according to these righteous judgments, that is a negative, that is bad, and it is an absolute affront to the very mission for which God called them. They ought to be doing what we read about in Pirkei Avot: be of the disciples of Aaron, loving peace, pursuing peace, and drawing all men to the Torah. Not stopping them, not telling them that they can't even study the Torah because they're not Jewish. You find that for me in here. Please, send it to me if you find it. It's not there. Ultimately, Isaiah chapter 2, Micah chapter 4, Isaiah chapter 56, on and on and on. Ultimately, the nations will stream to learn this way. That's what's going to change the world. When 10 men from the languages of the nation, Zechariah chapter 8, verse 23 says that they will come and they will say, "We will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you." Now, what if that group says, "Don't follow me"? What if they met them with, "I'm thankful that you're here. Now, let me help you"? Patriarchal plan. Look at chapter 22, Genesis 22, verse 15. "And the Malach, Jehovah, angel of the Lord," as the English puts it, "called to Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, 'By myself have I sworn, says Jehovah, because you've done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, that I will exceedingly bless you. I will exceedingly multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. Your seed shall possess the gate of its enemies, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because," get this, "you've obeyed my voice." Because of Abraham's obedience, it brings us to the phase where the seed will be multiplied, and as the stars of heaven, the dust of the sea, they'll possess the gates of their enemies, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed because Abraham is obedient. Look at chapter 26, Genesis 26. Now this is, we've shifted to Isaac now. Chapter 26 of Genesis, verse 3. God tells Isaac, verse 2, "Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I'll be with you, and I'll bless you. For to you and to your seed I'll give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I'll multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and I'll give to your seed all these countries, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Patriarchal plan is a global plan. You see, the story of the Torah begins in a universal way. The rabbis discuss this. Why didn't it start in Exodus chapter 12? Because it's not all about them. It's a global plan. God's concern is for humanity, that ultimately, from the rising of the sun to its setting, justice and righteousness will reign on this earth. Now, there is a group of people who are picked to bring that plan into fruition. Abraham, through Isaac, through Jacob, is designated as a people, a priestly nation, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation, a covenant people, a light to the Gentiles. And it's all based on a dream. In Jacob's story, in this week's Torah portion, in addition to getting the same charge and getting the same description of a blessing and knowing that it is hinged on, connected with an obligation to be a blessing to the nations of the world, he gets another piece of information. Sure, Jehovah's speaking to Jacob in the dream and he says, "I'll be with you," singular. But he seems to be describing more than Jacob. Remember in Hosea chapter 12, it says at Bethel he spoke with us. Well, let me show you the us. He says, "Your seed will spread out," is the way the English puts it. In Hebrew, it's pratz. It's this idea of breaking forth. West, east, north, south. He's not talking about Jacob as a person. It's there he's speaking with us. Hosea chapter 12. And you know what he says? He said, "I'll be with you wherever you go, and I will bring you back. I will bring you back." Look with me. I'm going to show you a few passages. This is the single most important, most consistently used passage in the prophets because, listen to me, God speaks to prophets in a dream, and you know what he's conveying to them? He's telling them the dream that the whole plan is based on. You know what this dream is about? You're leaving, you're coming back. He says, "I will bring thee back." If there's one thing that the Bible sounds forth over and over through the lips of the prophets is, "I will bring thee back." You can look at this on an individual basis. How many of us wandered off the path and we would attribute our coming back to the God of creation? "I will bring thee back." Look with me. Go with me. I'll just hit a few of them that I know. Jeremiah chapter 12. Jeremiah chapter 12. Love some Jeremiah. Yirmiyahu, verse 15. And it will come to pass, after I have plucked them out, I will return and have compassion on them and will bring them back, every man to his heritage, every man to his land. You see, Israel has to leave, so does Israel's seed has to leave the land, but God says, and I will bring them back. Look at chapter 16, Jeremiah 16 and verse 15. Well, let's just do 14. Therefore, verse 14, Jeremiah 16. Behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when it will no longer be said, as Jehovah lives that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as Jehovah lives that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands into which he had driven them, and I will bring them back into their land that I gave to their fathers. Look at chapter 24. Jeremiah 24. Jeremiah is full of this this idea. Jeremiah 24, verse 6. My eyes upon them for good. I will set my eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land. And I'll build them and not pull them down. I will plant them, not pluck them up. And I will give them a heart to know me, that I am Jehovah, and they shall be my people, and I'll be their God. For they shall return to me with their whole heart. Let me tell you something. There's a connection here between returning to Jehovah with all the heart and returning to the land that he gave to the fathers. Chapter 27, Jeremiah 27, verse 22. 21. By the way, this is in particular to Judah. For thus says Jehovah of hosts, God of Israel, concerning the vessels that remain in the house of the Lord and in the house of the king of Judah in Jerusalem, they shall be carried into Babel, and there they shall be until the day that I take heed of them, says the Lord. Then I will bring them up and restore them to this place. He is actually bringing back not the people. You can scratch that one off your notes. I had it in there, but it's part of the restoration, but it's not specific about the people. Look at chapter 30, verse 3. Let's start in verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah, saying, thus speaks Jehovah, the God of Israel, saying, write all the words that I've spoken to you in a book, for lo, days are coming, says Jehovah, when I will bring back the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, says Jehovah. I'll cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. When God tells Jeremiah that he's going to bring the people back to the land that he promised to the fathers, he's talking about the same promise that Jehovah makes in a dream Jacob at Bethel. Jacob heard this: I'll be with you wherever you go, and I'll bring you back. Your descendants will be to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south, and I'll bring them back. Look at Jeremiah chapter 32. Verse 37. Behold, I will gather them out of all the countries into which I've driven them in my anger and in my fury and in great wrath, and I will bring them back to this place, and I'll cause them to dwell safely And they shall be my people, and I will be their God, and I will give them one heart and one way, and they shall fear me forever for their good and that of their children after them. And I'll make an everlasting covenant with them that I will not turn away from doing good to them, but I will put my fear in their hearts. They will not turn aside from me. I will rejoice over them to do them good, and I will truly plant them in this land with all my heart and all my soul. This is the thing that God will do with all his heart and soul. Look at Zechariah chapter 10. Zechariah chapter 10. Listen to me. The prophetic plan is based on a dream. And in that dream, Jehovah spoke to us. Jeremiah 10:6. I'm sorry, Zechariah 10:6. And I will strengthen the house of Judah. And I will save the house of Joseph. And I will bring them back again, for I've had mercy on them, and they shall be as though I had not cast them off, for I am Jehovah their God and will hear them. Look at verse 10. Verse 9. And I will sow them among the peoples, and they shall remember me in far countries. And they shall live with their children and shall return. And I will bring them back out of the land of Egypt, gather them out of Assyria. I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon so that there will be no room for them. The promise that God makes is an eternal promise whispered to Jacob while his head rested on a stone in Bethel. On his way out of the land, Jehovah speaks to him in a dream. And Jacob wakes up. In chapter 28 of Genesis, verse 16 through 22, I'm just going to tell you, he wakes up and he said, "How awesome is this place? It's none other than the gate of God, the gate of heaven." And he takes oil, he pours it upon the stone, and he anoints it. And by the way, this particular passage is the first use of the word anoint. Some would suggest that this is a picture of the Messiah. I would say it more clearly. This is the first Messiah, is a stone that's anointed. Because anoint, mashak in Hebrew, literally means to rub or smear oil on something, to set it apart for sacred use. And then Jacob makes a vow, and it's a quid pro quo. He says, if you bring me back, if you do the things you said in that dream I just had, then you'll be my God. You got to love Jacob. Jacob is a deal maker. Who would bargain with God? Who would set the conditions for an agreement? Jacob, the father of this particular group, called to be a goy gadol, called to be a covenant people, a light to the nations, on and on and on, tells God, "Sounds good. You do what you say, and everything that I bring in, I'll give you a tenth." That's Jacob. I love Jacob. Jacob learns some life lessons along the way. He meets his match in this week's Torah portion in his uncle, Laban. The trickster gets tricked. It's like, I can almost imagine Laban saying, "You can't play a player. We know how things are done. We breed them in Haran." In fact, I often wonder, after you meet Laban in the story, you wonder how it is that that sweet Rivka knows this way to trick, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in this particular area. Jacob sees Rachel and he falls in love with her. She's beautiful. He wants to marry her. And there's an interesting part in the story where, you know the story, so I'm not going to go into all the details, but on the night of the wedding, he's tricked. He ends up with Leah. And when he confronts Laban about this, Laban says this, I think it's interesting. It's not done like that here, where the younger gets before the older. Now think about how you reap what you sow. Jacob just left a life where through his own doings and the help of his mother and perhaps being guided by the divine plan, the younger is exalted and the elder serves the younger. Notice that. Now think back when God tells Rebecca, you have two nations in your womb who are crushing one another, and the elder will serve the younger. And now, from her own family, we hear, it's not done like that here. It's not done like that. See, but the Creator has a plan. Once again, the plan is threatened as we work through the narrative by the same story. It's like a template is used to produce this holy people. It just so happens that once again, the chosen woman is barren. Sarah in chapter 11, verse 30 of Genesis. Rivka in chapter 25, verse 21 is barren. Rachel in chapter 29, verse 31 is barren. Three miraculous births have to take place. And let me tell you something. No other religion can boast of such. Three miraculous births. Sarah, you can't have children, but she has children. Rivka, you're barren, but she has children. Rachel, you're barren, but she has children. And in each of these cases, God's power is being shown. God's working a miracle in the womb to bring forth the people. And in the final phase, when we get to Jacob, remember this struggle is made manifest. I talked about it last week. A struggle, an eternal struggle. The story unfolds, and by the end of today's Torah portion, Jacob with his four women have 11 sons and one daughter that are mentioned. Benjamin is the only one accepted, E-X-C. He's the only one that is not born in this particular Torah portion. After the birth of Joseph in chapter 30, verse 22, only after Joseph comes forth, get this, Jacob hears a voice in his dream. Return to the land of your fathers. Now notice it's exactly the opposite of what Abraham was told. Get thee forth from your... He's told, Jacob has said, it's time to go home. It's time to go back. In fact, three dreams carry this Torah portion along. Jacob has a couple and Laban has one that basically tells him, don't fight Jacob. 20 years have gone by. Israel was exiled from the land. Notice I'm talking about Israel as in the patriarch Israel. Israel was exiled from the land. He was chased out, basically, in threat of losing his life. He's pursued on the return. Now I'm wondering, I've got prophetic text in mind to cover over the next several classes, but I'm thinking already that could this template apply in a prophetic way? When Israel returns, will there be pursuers on their heel? In fact, the language used of Laban's chase, remember, he's chasing down because Rachel, and I'll teach on this next week, Rachel stole her dad's idols. And you've got Laban is chasing down Jacob. He's chasing him down. You know, the language used in that chase is very similar to Exodus 14 when the Egyptians chase Israel. Very interesting. But we'll look more at that later. Israel, at the end of the Parsha, at the end of this Torah portion, prepares to return to the land sworn to him in an oath. And just like the story begins, it ends with a very interesting meeting with Malachim, messengers, angels. When he leaves, he dreams of angels. When he returns, it got me thinking, is that land guarded in a similar way? Maybe we can't see it, by messengers. Jacob sees them in the spirit, if you will. When he leaves, he calls the place Beit El, the house of God. When he comes back, he's at another place called Mahanaim, which means two camps. We're going to learn more about that in next week's Torah portion. But he says, this is the camp of God. God is at the going out and at the coming in. Our story contains a departure and a return met by messengers at both ends. It's almost like it was framed with this idea. A dream with a promise of returns begins in this week's Torah portion. And I want you to listen to this. I want you to, talking about a dream and the return. Go to Psalm 126. Psalm 126. This is a ma'alot, a song of ascent. When Jehovah brought back the captivity of Zion, we were like men in a dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then they said among the nations, Jehovah has done great things for them. Jehovah has done great things for us. We are glad. Bring back our captivity, O Jehovah, like the streams in the Negev. They who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who goes weeping on his way, bearing a bag of seed, shall come back with a joyful shout, carrying his sheaves. When Jehovah brings back the captivity, by the way, the translation there, captivity, it literally, and that's an interesting phrase to study, it basically is when Jehovah causes to return the returners. It uses the repetition of the word shuv. It says, we were like those who dream. The very plan and purpose of God is communicated on the wings of a dream. And in the real world, we would say, as it's acting out, The returnees are saying, it was like a dream. Have you ever had a dream that's so real that when you wake up, you're like, golly, that felt like it was really happening? The very plans and purposes of heaven were planted in the clouds. The stuff of a dream. And it's a very special dream. I learned this from my teacher, Dr. Tabor, and I want you to hear it as I close. Go to Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31. Verse 22. Now in the English it might be verse 23. Thus says Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, yet again they shall use this speech in the land of Judah and in its cities, when I shall bring back their captivity. This is the stuff of dreams of Psalm 126. Jehovah bless thee, O habitation of justice and mountain of holiness, and in it shall dwell Judah and all its cities together, the farmers and they that go out with the flocks. For I will satisfy the weary soul, and I will replenish every languishing soul. Upon this I awoke and beheld, and my sleep was sweet to me. Who's speaking? Now I know a lot of people assume that Jeremiah is speaking. This particular series of verses are set apart by white spaces, indicating that the continuing narrative is not broken. It begins saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, and he relates several things that are going to happen. And then it says, and upon this I awoke and beheld, and my sleep was sweet to me. The image is worth the point. This is God's dream, that those who departed will return. He says, I will not leave you until I bring to pass that which I've spoken to you. I'll be with you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this place. God says that the one thing Jehovah will do with all his heart and soul, he says, is he'll bring his people back. At Beit El, he spoke with us. He shared his dream with Jacob. And he has subsequently shared that dream with prophets throughout the ages. And so I wanted to share it with you this morning. So think about that. Think about how everything that we believe and live and have committed our life and honor to is based upon a dream at Beit El. Shabbat Shalom.